You know, I've been sort of fearful about this this evening as I've attended other retirement dinners in the past. But you know, it's been very pleasant. It's certainly lovely things that Carol said. I've enjoyed every minute of it. It's been very nice. I thought it'd be terrible. I've liked it. I thank you all. It's awfully nice of you to come out. I tried to speak to people. I know there are a few that I haven't spoken to, and I apologize for that being so. Maybe you'll see me afterwards, and I can say hello to those to whom I haven't spoken before. At this time, you know, there's a temptation to say my life and how it happened, but I don't want to do that. But I think I ought to say something about a few things. And one thing that I certainly ought to speak of is the family support that I had as I started out as a boy in Wilmington, before I wrote pieces on history for the WISP, which is Wilmington High School Publication, WHISP, and it was their literary magazine. I enjoyed working on it very much. I think I also wrote an article on Virgil for it. I didn't remember all of the ones Carol had seen. I was an only child of parents who had not gone to college. I don't think they'd gone to high school, though my mother did go to business school while she was working. She went to Beacon College while she was working. I not only was the only child, and there's some great advantages in that, though there are disadvantages. But I was the only child in my mother's family, and she was one of five brothers and sisters. And her three sisters had no other nephew but me. So I got lots of attention. Now, my father was one of eight children, but they had children, and I didn't know them quite as much. But my mother's sisters were around all the time. They gave me illustrated books as a little boy. I mean, I had books with illustrations by Howard Pyle and by N.C. Wyeth, and whenever you had to bring books to school, you know, to show what you had, I had books that nobody else in the class had because it was because of these aunts bringing them to me. And through my youth, I had a great deal of attention. I always had perfect cooperation in studying. And I wasn't expected to do much around. I was sickly, for one thing. I'd been sick a good bit. And very little was asked of me around the house. It's astonishing how I got away with what I did when I think about it. And my aunt typed my master's thesis, for instance, one of my aunts. She supplied the paper, too. She was a top secretary in the DuPont Company. I don't think she had much typing normally to do, but she ruled it all so carefully that the man under whom I wrote it, who was George Herbert Ryden, commented on the beautiful typing job that I had. So I never lived away from home. I commuted to college. I came here and commuted, and I went to the University of Pennsylvania commuting. And when I was married at 31, and moved to my own home, I continued to get the same sort of attention. My wife typed my doctoral dissertation. I got married just in time to let that happen, to get my doctoral dissertation typed. And such are the ways of the world that while she was typing my dissertation, her master's thesis in chemistry and plastics chemistry, written under Betty Dyer, whom a lot of you know, was being typed for her. And grants from the Armstrong Cork Company, which was supporting her research. But historians don't get grants, you know, as chemists, plastics chemists at any rate then did. I got support. She's told a joke tonight that I might even repeat. Coming home Saturday from the library at the university, I saw Dr. Roy Donahoe working in his front lawn, and I rolled down the window and talked to Roy, whom I've known since he was a student at college. As a matter of fact, his wife did her practice teaching with me when I was a teacher at Newark High School. It was my first year, and we were babes in the woods, both of us. But so I spoke to Roy, and Roy said, "Do you have any leaves?" I said, "Oh, no, Roy, I'm retired now. I don't have any more leaves." He said, those that fall on the ground. I said, oh, Dorothy takes care of that. And once President Perkins, who could get very angry, he didn't get angry at me, but he got angry at all the department chairmen, and he sent out a letter that I didn't like at all. And I thought it was on the edge of being insulting to the chairman, and I wrote him and said so. And he came to me and said, he said, I'm very sorry, he said. He said, I didn't mean you. He said, I know you don't go home and just mow the lawn. It was very true. I had an illness when I was young. I had a bleeding disease that you, if you survive, you get over it at about 30 and don't have it anymore. It's not the hereditary one. And as Michael will be glad to know. And then I think I developed arthritis. And these things may have had a purpose, you know, to save me from things that I didn't want to do. Dorothy's father used to come to our house and he'd have his tool chest with him, and he'd say to Dorothy, what do you have for me to do now? And when we were first married, my mother would send my father down on the bus to do some work around the house. So I've had an enormous amount of support. And my children, the boys at any rate, the two sons, of whom one is here and one in Milwaukee, they learned to wire the house, I think, before they went to first grade. And they certainly were awfully good with hammer and buildings, things around the house. They never were deterred from it by me. I never stopped them from learning how to use tools. They were both very handy. And then also, as further support, I didn't have aunts anymore. They died. But I was very careful. I married a wife with a twin sister. And so that gave me immediately further resources, you know, in the family that I could depend on. And the twin sister married my office mate, bringing more in. And you see, they produced a son who's an historian, too. I think I did these things not purposely, but they worked out very well for me. Anyway, it's very hard to be glum and unhappy when you have such fortunate domestic situations as I have lived in all my life. And I appreciate it very much. I really have never felt that I was living up to what my mother expected of me. My father expected of me, yes, I was living up to, but not what my mother expected of me yet. And it's been something on my mind all the time. Now, 50 years ago this fall, I'll just be brief, but 50 years ago this fall, I came to Delaware College. The University of Delaware, it had been since 1921, but I attended Delaware College, the women's college I knew very little about. There were about 500 men at Delaware College. That was a small number. I came from a high school that had 3,000 in it. Wilmington High School had 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th grade. 3,000 students, and Delaware College only had 500. But it nevertheless was opening up a world to me, a world of scholarship. I had some very good high school teachers, but still there was a different attitude here, and I enjoyed it very much. I commuted. I took in the first year the history, English, language, which was German in this case. I'd had French and Latin in high school, German, and two sciences and mathematics. I took an extra course because I was exempted from military science and physical education. I'd been in bed for about 2 months that summer after I'd had a hemorrhage, and so I couldn't take those subjects, and so I took the two laboratory sciences. And when my grades came out that year, I knew where I belonged. History, English, German, they were my fields, not the sciences and not mathematics. And I knew what I'd enjoyed studying, too. One carried one's lunch, rode in an automobile, paid 25 cents a day to a driver, a student, who picked you up at the house and brought you back to the house. You had to wait till the whole group finished, of course, till all the riders finished. And since there were engineers, that meant almost every afternoon, 6 days a week, but not Saturday afternoon. We carried our lunch in paper bags. We had a great time. We sometimes would go get a milkshake after lunch at Rhodes Drugstore. The world revolved around the campus north of Main Street. Most of the classes for arts and science students were in recitation hall. The lounge was in Old College on the east wing of the second floor of Old College, the main floor of Old College. Science classes, of course, were in Wolf Hall. Engineers were in Evans Hall. The library was down the campus. Education department was in its basement. But most of your life was spent up north of Main Street then. And Rhodes Drugstore was a very popular place. The Deluxe, which hasn't changed very much, the Deluxe Restaurant or whatever it's called, Sweet Shop or something, it hasn't really changed very much since then. Rhodes Drugstore has changed a great deal in its internal appearance from what it was in those days. It had some tables, and it had a soda counter, a fountain there. 500 students, cost, slightly over $100 a year, I think. Slightly over $100 a year. And then 25 cents a day for the travel. And an aunt of mine, I think, paid for my transportation. Things were hard for the Monroes in those years. 1932, if you don't remember, was a depression. And the banks closed in about March of 1933. And it was not a good time. But we were all poor together. And the students enjoyed it very much, and I don't think I ever really felt poor at all about it. And then I came back 40 and a half years ago. I came back in February of 1942. Incidentally, it's so soon after I took my master's degree because when I finished at Delaware, I had immediately started taking summer school courses toward a master's degree right here in Newark. Well, I was teaching in Newark High School. And when I finished those courses, that is the fourth summer, I quit my job and I went to the University of Pennsylvania. But I had to write a thesis. I hadn't written the thesis. I went to Pennsylvania in 1939. I had 2.5 years there. But while I was there, I discovered that one had to do all the work on a doctorate within, I don't know whether it was 5 years or 7 years. All the courses had to be in that time, too. Now, since my courses at Delaware had stretched by, my graduate courses, it had stretched back to 36, and I was using them and the credits for a doctorate, and I was very eager to get through and get a job. Since that was so, I wanted to solidify them, freeze them. If you had a master's degree, they were good eternally. So then after I was actually finished all my coursework at the University of Pennsylvania on a doctorate, which was after the second year there, I wrote a master's thesis that summer for the University of Delaware to freeze those courses so that if I could get a job, which having been reared in the Depression was the great desideratum, if I could get a job, I could leave, you see, and those courses would be frozen and I could take more time working on a doctorate if I needed to. And I took my comprehensive examinations in January of 1942, and 2 weeks later I came to the University of Delaware just to fill in for a year. George Herbert Ryden had died in the fall, and two women who are here in the room were taking his place, were just helping the history department out by filling in for him, Marjorie Tillman, who is here, and Marion Reed, who is here. Wives of members of the department were teaching. Isn't that right? Teaching, I think, filling out the year, probably not teaching his advanced course, which might have been given up for all I know, but his basic courses. And I replaced Mrs. Tillman and Mrs. Reed, who are here, just for the spring term, just till the university decided what it was going to do. But I had all on a doctorate except the dissertation even then. And I taught for the spring, and the department was kind enough to say they would like me to stay there. But the president of the university said, no, they must get a person with a doctorate. Well, already had a doctorate and had gone somewhere, which I can understand now. It seems perfectly reasonable to me. So a man was brought in with a doctorate, and the department was very nice to me. Incidentally, it was an awfully good group of people. They were quite diverse in their ways. Professor Barclay, for instance, whom none of you know, his daughter is a graduate of Delaware. Professor Barclay was a fundamentalist Presbyterian and quite different in some ways from the others. But they were very nice. I never heard them backbite. I never heard one of them say an unpleasant word about one of the others. They must have thought some sometimes, but they didn't say them. They were gentlemen always. When we had our meetings, our department meetings, I got a tight minutes of the meeting afterwards, and I had been given a file cabinet, a four-drawer, three-drawer file cabinet. I was sharing an office with a psychologist named Kermit Oberlin, and they asked me if I wanted the file cabinet. I was entitled to one, and I said, I don't know what I'll do with it. Kermit hit me from the rear. He'd taught me, and he hit me and said, yes, take it, because he needed more file space. And so all I had to put in it were these minutes of the meeting that came every 2 weeks. I just opened the drawer and threw it in. I didn't know anything about filing. I threw it in the drawer. Well, the department was nice enough to me to let me teach summer school that summer of 1942. And this was a great thing then. Salaries were what? $1,800 was mine to begin. And that's what they'd been in 1932, as I know from my history. It hadn't changed. As a matter of fact, it had changed between 32 and 42. It had declined by one-tenth. The state legislature in the Depression told every agency that got money from the state that they must decrease all salaries by, and it gave them specifics. Between $1,200 and $3,500, they had to decrease by 10%. Between $3,500 and $5,000, they had to cut them by 15%. Between $5,000 up, they had to cut them by 20%. That only affected the president. They had to, even if the money came from the federal government. There were some men in agriculture who were paid wholly on federal government funds, which hadn't changed. Or there were some men who were paid wholly on special funds. Amy DuPont, for instance, of the Unidel Foundations, supplemented the salary of someone in home economics in order to have a person here. Pierre DuPont was supplementing a salary or so. Fletcher Brown may have been or may not have been then, I don't remember, in that particular year. But didn't matter. The legislature said everyone must have that cut. So the cut had to be extended, you see, across the whole thing. And from 1800, therefore, they'd all fallen. And they'd gotten back by the time I came, it was 4200. Well, teaching summer school then was something that men looked forward to supplement their incomes. But the department was nice to me. Since I wasn't coming back here, I could teach summer school and make a little more. And I did. And I was to go back to Pennsylvania as chairman of the teaching assistants the next year. And then one day I was working in the Historical Society of Pennsylvania, and someone phoned me. I think it was Clay Reed, whom you saw on the bicycle. And Clay said that he had been offered a postdoctoral fellowship at Princeton that he hadn't applied for, and that the president had said he might take it if he could adequately be replaced at that moment, and would I be interested in replacing him next year. So I thought about it. $1,800 at Delaware, as against what was my salary to be at the University of Pennsylvania? It had gone up $400 for chairman of the assistants. $300 is what you and I made, Dick, when we were assistants. But I was to be chairman. I was to get $400 plus free tuition. Now, free tuition at Penn meant about $700 then. The difficulty was, so that wasn't so bad. You know, it was worth $1,100. But I had finished all my coursework. I had taken my examinations, and there wasn't any sustaining fee for the doctorate. So, you know, $400 against $1,800, being at Delaware, making money, you know, able to take a girl out once in a while or do all those things I hadn't been able to do for a long time. I'd been going out for a long time. Taking a nickel cup of coffee was all I could do in the evening when I went out with friends. So I stayed at Delaware, though Clay Reed warned me. He said, you'll be 5 years more in getting your doctorate if you stay here than if you go to Pennsylvania this year. And I was 5 years in completing the dissertation. And so in 42, the department was made up wholly of the people who had taught me, except for George Ryden, who had died, and a young man in political science. It was a history and political science department. And the young man in political science was one you all know, the late lamented Paul Dolan. And he and I were similarly, we were both with master's degrees and without doctorates. And you can understand why I miss Paul so much, because we had so many things that we could go back and talk about. And then in that year, people began to leave to go in the service in the 42-43 year, and I was 4F, and Army students were sent here. And as a result, I'm still here. But it was all, in a sense, accidental. I didn't think I would still be here. I thought I was taking a job first for one term, and then I thought I was taking a job for 1 year more. And I was delighted to do it and delighted to come back from my alma mater. It was a great pleasure, and it's been a great pleasure these years. And I thought I would miss very much retiring, and now I'm retired, and I'm there every day on campus, and I'm in the library every day, and really, except that I don't have any papers to grade, I haven't noticed much difference. I even have captive audiences like you still to talk to, you say, or the group from the Christina River Conservancy that Arthur Trebon heard me talk to last night, so there's still captive audiences. And you know, I've graded enough papers. I don't want to grade anymore. Thank you very much.